All right, this is the Happy House Hunters, and we're talking about fixing. So I have finally the big project of the month or of the year for us. The well drilling rig is supposed to show up later today or tomorrow morning at our Huffines property down in Hocking Hills. And finally, we get a well. Now, my big concern, and again, this just is if you get a country property, and I try to steer away from country properties on purpose because I don't want to deal with septics and wells. That's always been one of my things. I grew up in the country, so I get it. But those were such big ticket items when you have a country property. Now, I have purchased a couple of country properties. And one of the ones I purchased was for my daughter, Jen, and my son-in-law, Matt. And it was a foreclosure. And this was back, I really don't remember exactly when we bought that property, but it was when everything kind of crashed back in 08, 09, 2010. And then as we started to climb out of that, there was still a lot of foreclosures out there on the market. And they, of course, didn't have a lot of money. So I said, well, let's go toward a foreclosure because what foreclosure means to me is definitely some rehab work. Because when you buy a foreclosure, usually the people haven't paid their mortgage, which is why their house went into foreclosure. And if they haven't paid their mortgage, they probably have not done the maintenance either. And then it even gets worse on a lot of those foreclosures. Sometimes on their way out, the buyer who was losing their home, they would be so upset for whatever reason that they were losing their home, that they would then try to sell off things like the air unit, the furnace, the cabinets out of the kitchen, the real wood doors. They would try to just liquidate everything they could to put some cash in their pocket. And so oftentimes by the time the bank got this property back, it was pretty stripped down. And then of course the utilities would be turned off, and then they would just have somebody keep it mowed so it wasn't an eyesore or a problem in the neighborhood. And so what happened when we were looking at all these foreclosures, that Matt, one of the things he wanted is he wanted a country property. Well, that meant well and septic. And with the utilities off, you couldn't even turn the faucet on in the kitchen to see if the well was dry or working or not working, or whether they sold the pump out of the bottom of the well. You had no idea. And so we had to consider that when we made an offer on a foreclosed property, we had to always consider worst case scenario. So whenever you're buying something that's in foreclosure, the reason that you're getting it for the price you're getting it for is usually because the bank just wants to unload it. The bank really doesn't want to own those properties. The bank ends up getting them back because they've, used it as collateral for the loan. But a lot of FHA loans, the bank has already had those loans insured by the federal government if it's a federally backed loan. So the bank kind of got their money, if you will, because it's been federally backed. And so at this point, they just want that off their books. They don't want to keep paying some guy to go out there and mow it or whatever. They don't need the liability of people breaking in and squatters getting in there, maybe even accidentally burning it down or whatever, because they're trying to stay warm in the winter. But for whatever reason, the bank really just doesn't want those. And so that's a perfect way to get a property at a pretty good price. And so Matt and Jen, my daughter and son-in-law, they listed their five or six must-haves. It had to have some acreage. They wanted it to be in the country. They wanted to be able to build an outbuilding. Matt is one of those kind of guys that, his kids spend their days on four-wheelers, and on his weekends, they want to go fishing. So he's got a fishing boat. And so you get it. So he said, city living's not for me. He said, I got to have something where I can have the boat and the four wheelers and, a barn or a larger garage of some sort. And so when we found this property, we had no idea if the well and the septic was even passable. So the first thing that we did, and for those of you that look at country properties, and Tammy may already know this, is that you can check with your municipality and they'll have a well report, generally, depending on how old it is. And you can at least see when it was last operative. And it may not be currently, but you can see when it operated last. And so over the long haul, We decided to take a chance on this property because we knew, and here's the criteria, we knew there was enough acreage. If we had to put in a new septic or if we had to dig a new well, there was enough acreage to do that. We looked at a property right on the edge of Canal Winchester that was considered in the country. It was considered not in canal proper, and it had a well and septic, and it sat on a half acre lot. And Matt still thought, you know, well, it's still big enough. I could probably put an outbuilding there, you know, to put in the boat and the four wheelers. But we said, there's not enough room if this well and septic doesn't work. There wasn't enough room to put in a new septic or drill a new well. And so we passed on that one. Now, somebody did buy it and the well and septic was okay. And so they're living there. But we just that was part of our criteria as helping them fund that purchase, was that it had to have enough acreage. If we had to, we had room to do a well and septic on there. And then we had to include that into our price. When we made an offer that, what if the well doesn't work? You can even use it as an investment property because you have to have water. So with all of that said, I said, I don't want any more country properties for that reason. You know, I just don't. Even though, and Tammy will laugh about this one, even though a lot of those city properties, you have standpipes that need replaced because they're all rusted out, or you have to dig a trench and reconnect to the city sewer or whatever, it's still cheaper than drilling a well and putting in an entire septic, generally speaking. I mean, it has to be really bad to cost as much, if not more. So still, I was all about, I don't want country property. I wanted to be in the city where the worst case scenario is I'd have to run a new line to the city sewer. And so I've stayed away from all of those country properties over the years. And now we're doing a lot more short term, we're doing a lot more midterm, and all of a sudden Hocking Hills is just exploding. When we went through the pandemic, folks were not as comfortable staying in hotels and or going to big cities or whatever, but everybody wanted to go to Hocking Hills and rent a cabin because it was just their family, it was away from everybody else. They didn't have to worry about the pandemic. They didn't have to worry about wearing masks around their family, and they could go there and have a nice weekend, still feel like they went on vacation and not have all of those pandemic restrictions. So Hocking Hills just exploded during that time. Well, the good news is that folks realized that they loved it. Even in good times and bad, they loved that whole area. They loved the idea of kind of what we call glamping, you know, where you've got a nice cabin, you've got nice upscale bathrooms, but yet you're out in the woods in a cabin and you've got the fireplace and the deck and the hiking in the woods and all of that. So we started looking for a property in Hocking Hills. And that was that. I finally said, okay, I realize there's going to be no city utilities. I get that. So we made an offer on a couple and didn't get them. Somebody had outbid us, but we knew how much we wanted to spend because we wanted to pay cash. And so we finally found one that looked pretty decent. We went, drove by it and made an offer, and we got it. Now, the reason we know we got this one is it already did not have a well. It had an underground cistern. And so we were like, okay, before we actually made our offer, we said, describe this to us. And so the realtor explained it to us and said, this is a property that the previous owners have actually buried a big plastic container underground intended to hold water. And it's not an old-fashioned cistern like your grandmother might have had at her farmhouse, but this is an actual plastic self-contained water system, and then it's buried so that it doesn't freeze, and then it's piped into the house, and a water truck comes by every so many weeks and simply fills it up. Well, we liked that idea because we didn't have to worry about a well, but and we could have built a well house around it. There's all kind of options we had, but it just had like a stone top on it that is movable. Even with my strength or lack of strength, I could scoot it over so that the water truck could put the water in there. Well, we just had visions. If we use this as a short-term rental, what happens if, you know, a whole, and I hate to be stereotypical, but what happens if a whole bunch of frat boys go down there to have a party on a short-term rental in Hocking Hills, and they think it's funny to put something in the cistern, you know? And so we were like, oh, we'd rather have an enclosed well and a well pump than to have this open cistern that, and again, we could have built a well house around it and, you know, put a lock on the door. There's all kinds of things we could have done. But I didn't want that look of having like a little outhouse in the yard, which is what that would look like. That's what it would remind me of if I built a little building around this cistern. So anyhow, we said, you know what, the property is going to be worth more if we just drill a well. So I went to work on lining up all of the possibilities. I made all the phone calls. I got all the quotes, all the estimates, and everyone told us, that's a tough area. And they said, we pulled all the well reports from all the neighbors. And they said, everybody's well is really, really deep there because we're up on a ridge. And so they said, everybody's well is really deep. We've got to go pretty deep to even find water. That's if we find water. Yeah, you caught that. That's if they find water. And so they said, by the time we quote how deep we have to go, it's going to be about $20,000 to drill a well. Well, we still decided that was going to be worth it for us, you know, to have that done. So we got on the schedule. And so now it goes to the city of Logan, because we're talking Hocking Hills. So now it goes to the city of Logan, and they have to issue a permit for whatever company we choose to drill the well. And their concern is they said, well, what are you going to do with the cistern? We want you to fill it in. And so we were like, oh, okay. So now we're just kind of sitting on that, trying to decide, you know, what we're going to do. Are we going to just use the cistern? Are we going to go ahead and drill a well? Are we going to fill it in? And finally, it was the well guys themselves. And they said, you know what? They said, really what the city wants to know is, are you going to cut loose the cistern? Because the cistern has to be tested every so often. Because remember the story, we were afraid somebody could put something in it. Well, that water has to be tested every so often. And so the city was concerned if we get the well, we would stop testing the cistern and maybe be still using it as a backup or whatever. And so the well folks, they actually got the permit for us, they actually filled out that section of the permit saying that they were going to cut the cistern loose and just the well would go into the house for the water usage. The cistern would still be there. We wouldn't have to fill it in, but we would not be using it to put water into the house. And the city then agreed to that. So that's where we were with it. Well, then the guys got busy, and Tammy will tell you every month is like, you got your well yet? Nope. Got your well yet? Nope. Well, finally I got a notice over the weekend that they said either today, this afternoon, or sometime tomorrow, the rig is going to show up and they are going to start drilling, and it's going to be really, really deep, and it's going to be really, really expensive. And it's hard to type with both fingers crossed that they actually find water. So, so that's where we're at with it. Now, to make matters worse, remember I said we're up on a ridge. The way this property sits, when you come up the road, a driveway goes in down below us and goes in behind our property to another house. And that other house has a beautiful pond with gravel sides and fishing benches and a little dock for their little rowboat and, you know, picnic areas. And you can tell they've put some major money into putting in this pond behind their house. And it's probably would be the equivalent of someone's swimming pool, because the water is beautiful. There's a little fountain in the middle. You know, the kids can swim. They probably have stocked it with some fish. We don't know. Well, we're uphill, and right where the well is going to go, there is going to be thousands of gallons of water that's going to run down our hill. It's going to be all mud right into their pond. And we have no way to stop that. So needless to say, I didn't sleep well last night. Because I'm not sure exactly how that's going to turn out yet. But the well driller said, we do this all the time. They said they're going to put up, you've seen those snow fences, and you've seen where they're going to put up some sort of a barrier to try to at least stop the mud. But we do know that the water is definitely going to reach their pond, and it will probably stir things up for a few days. And so anyway, it's in the contract that they are not responsible for anything that happens to the neighbor's property. They're not responsible for anything they do to our property. They're only responsible to try their best to hit water. And if they do, to connect it to the house. That's the whole contract. So this is going to be one of those weeks. So that's my big fixing story today. And again, there's not much for me to do other than, you know, maybe wring my hands and pace around on the floor a little bit, but there's really nothing for me to do. I don't do any well drilling. So it's best if I probably just stay away and not stress about it while it's happening, and expect the best. You know, just expect that this is going to be for the best. We know over time in the long run that this is the right thing to do, is to actually have a well on that property instead of being relying on the cistern. And we know that that's our best investment for that property long term. And just the fact that we got it, again, it's like those foreclosures. We got it for the price we got it for because it didn't have a well. So it is definitely going to increase the value of the property just as soon as all of this is done. And then we just have to do whatever it is we have to do at the other end to clean everything up. So I already have my son-in-law kind of in my back pocket. He loves those country properties. He's all about ponds and pools and all of that. So he knows how to clear up the pond water once we're done. If it gets cloudy, he knows what to put in it to clear it up. So we've got him on standby to try to make the neighbors whole and whatever damage we inadvertently do. And then we'll have to decide what we need to do to the yard where our property sits. It won't affect the house at all, the structure, but it could damage the yard quite a bit, depending on how much. Because remember, they're drilling 380 feet down into the earth, and all of that has to come out somewhere. So all of that's going to come out and run down the hill toward that pond, toward that beautiful pond. So anyway, so that's my fixing story for today. It's you have to decide what's best in the bigger picture. So no matter what needs to be repaired on any of your properties, I get it that sometimes it's easier to put a Band-Aid on it and not look at the down the road at the bigger picture. And that's okay, because sometimes it's something that you need to revisit. We went ahead and rented this, and the girl was okay with using the underground water tank for now. And she's paying the utilities. So she scheduled directly with the water truck, and they were keeping the water tank filled on whatever her usage is. But this is just going to be a wonderful thing for her. She will no longer have that expense once the well is in. Then she'll have her own water right there on the property. And we did find out, you know, just again, country property. Nobody had lived there for a while. She moved in, and the first thing that happened, she flushed the toilet. And of course, it didn't want to flush. And so we had to call a septic company to come out and pump out the septic. And they said it looked like it had never been pumped ever. And so we had that done so that she could live there. And then of course she started ordering the water, and she's happy there. She loves it. It's in the country. It suits her perfectly. And she's got three little doggies, and she's just happy as she can be. Now she has to divert her three little doggies to the other side of the house so that they're not running around in the mud because they're indoor doggies. Yeah, so that could be a problem for her for a minute until everything gets dried out. So we're hoping that it goes well, that they hit water, that they hit good water, not just hit water, but hit good water. Because then if they hit water that has either a lot of calcium or a lot of iron or whatever, then we'll have to get some sort of a softening system or water treatment system to take the iron or whatever out of the water before she can even use it. So we know that that's also in our future, that we have to pay attention to that. So you can see why I didn't like country properties. because this is a lot bigger deal than just cleaning out a sewer line to the street. And so, and I get that cleaning out a sewer line to the street is a big deal, but this is a much bigger deal. So I get that. And we thought we might have to go through this with, you know, again, my daughter and son-in-law's property. But once we closed on that one and they moved in, the well was fine. We had it tested. The water was fine. The septic, I think, needed cleaned out. But that was like, I don't know, maybe $400. And that was the only thing we had to do to that property, even though it had been in foreclosure. So we lucked out. But again, we had to be prepared just in case. So this is the first one where we've had to actually drill a well. So, and it's not because of a bad well, it's because of no well. So it's okay. So our plan is we rented it long-term for this girl. She's there for a year and maybe more. I told her she's welcome to stay as long as she wants. But the deal for us was that once she did decide to move on, if and when, that's when we would use it as a short-term rental. And the rule is this: whatever your long-term rental rates are, whatever the market will bear, you get twice that if it's a midterm rental, you get four times that if it's a short-term rental. Now, there's more work. If it's a midterm, you're going to flip that property three or four times a year. If it's a short-term, you might be flipping it every day, every weekend. It depends on how many nights your minimum night stay is. So there's a lot more work. You get a lot more money, but there's a lot more work. But our plan is once she does decide to move on, our plan is to turn that into a short-term rental. But it gives us that first full year, as I like to say, to work all the bugs out. We can get the well in. We can get the yard cleaned up. We can make the neighbors happy where we muddied their pond. We can decide if the driveway is working through the winter, if we need to reroute the driveway to a different area so it's not so steep. We can decide if the heating is going to be okay. See, so it's a lot of things that we didn't want to deal with somebody spending a bunch of money for their vacation and then find out that there's issues and we can't get them fixed fast enough. And so that way, by having a long-term renter there, she'll work with us, we can work with her. And like I said, we can work all the bugs out before we make it a short-term. So I like to do a long-term on any of my short-term properties. I like to do a long-term first for that reason. That way, if something's not working, it gives you time to fix it. Whereas if you have a short term with a vacation, they're going to be pretty upset if the air goes out, you know, when it's 90 degrees outside. Whereas if you have a long term renter and they're like, oh, I'm at work, you know, yeah, have your guy come in tomorrow while I'm at work and fix it. Well, sometimes you can't do that on a short term because it's ruining their vacation. And so it just makes it a lot more difficult. So anyhow, so that's why I like to do a long term renter in all of my properties before I roll them over to midterm or short-term, if that makes sense. So question, comments about any of that before we move on? No? You guys just all feel bad for me, I can tell. When I said something about, you know, I saw your faces like, oh no.
It's always for me. I just can't imagine it because, you know, that's just not where I'm at yet. So I'm just thinking about, oh, spending how much to do what? Okay. Wow. I'm happy for you. Stressed out a little bit.
Okay. Let me put it into perspective. You know what you paid for your duplex. Mm-hmm. We paid $59,000 for 1.5 acres in the center, literally in the center of Hocking Hills. Yeah. So my question to myself, and here's how I always gauge that. Would I have paid $79,000 for that same property? Mm. Yeah. So putting $20,000 into a well on a $59,000 property is still a good investment for us. So you see where I'm going with that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when you think about you're spending $20,000 to put in a well, and then maybe even another $5,000 if I have to put in some sort of a system to, you know, get the iron out or whatever. When you think about it, you have to look at the big picture. What is the value of this property once it has the well? Mm-hmm. My guess, you know, we've gone in and cleaned it up. We've painted everything. You know, we've fixed everything up. We've put, you know, we're adding some supplementary heat because again, she's in a place where if her power goes out, you know, how's her furnace going to kick on? And so Mark is in the process of buying a couple of actual propane heaters that connect right to the wall, that all she has to do is turn on the propane and light the pilot light like you would a gas stove. And she's got heat with, even if she has no electric. And so those are some things that, you know, we're adding to her unit. And so now with some auxiliary heat, with a well already installed, with the yard already landscaped, with happy neighbors after we, you know, make sure their pond is back in order, what would that property go on the market for today? My guess is it's probably $120,000 to $150,000 property. So you can see where, you know, we had to look at the big picture when deciding, are we going to do this? So anyway, so that's just kind of my thought process when it comes to fixing. The last unit that I flipped, we had to touch everything. The people had been there for a while, and every time we would send maintenance in, like thermostat quit working, and the furnace was fine. It's just the thermostat quit. So we had to go in and change the thermostat. And so, you know, you get an opportunity to go into the unit, and Mark didn't even want to put his knee down on the carpet. He goes, "What is on their carpet?" It was like so dirty. And we were like, "Ew." Mark is like, because we were headed to dinner. Mark's like, "I'll just go throw this new thermostat on the wall. They'll be good to go." And Mark's like, "You got anything I can put my knee on?" He goes, "I don't want to put my knee down on the floor to so he could see straight in on the thermostat to get it level." He said, "I don't even want to put my knee on the floor," because he says, "We're going to dinner after this, and I don't want to have a dirty spot on my pants." So anyhow, we knew that that was coming, and I really wanted to get them out of there. But they were so nice. I mean, they were sweet people. This is just, you know, over the years, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And I'm thinking, oh, they got to go. They got to go. And so they knew, you know, and this is what it generally your tenants know. They knew that they were going to get hit out of their deposit for damages. And their fear was that, of course, the damages were going to be more than their deposit. And so they like snuck away in the middle of the night. So the girl upstairs, because it's a duplex, the girl upstairs called me and she goes, "I have some bad news." She goes, "I think your renters downstairs moved out in the middle of the night." And she said, "I don't know if they were going to tell you or not." And of course, she couldn't tell I was doing a happy dance. So so anyway, when we finally got in there, I told Matt, I said, I had not put new carpet in that unit since we bought it. And we had rented it for several years before this couple even moved in. And it was high grade Berber carpeting. And I would think, okay, the first time I rented it, I thought when they move out, I'm going to have to replace that carpet, because I didn't when I bought it. It was a family had bought the duplex for the girl's mother, because she was a retired teacher, music teacher. And so it was like the perfect grandma's house. It had this upscale Berber carpeting. You could tell they put some money into it so that grandma would be really happy. And so when I bought it, it was move-in ready. You know, they moved her furniture out and my tenant moved in. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to shampoo it, steam clean it. I have a guy in Lancaster that he does a great job steam cleaning. I thought, I'm going to steam clean it. If it doesn't look really good, then I'll replace the carpet. Well, he steam cleaned it, looked awesome. So I rented it again. And they were there a couple of years. And then when they moved out, I thought, well, I'm going to steam clean it. And if it doesn't clean up, I'm going to work on it. It looked awesome again. So I rented it another couple of years. So I can't complain. I got my money's worth out of that unit and out of that carpet. And so finally, when this couple moved out, and I thought, I'm not even going to try to steam clean it. It, you know, they had a couple of kids, whatever. It was bad. And so Matt went in, and it was probably my most expensive flip that I had done in between tenants, because we had to paint everything. We had to carpet, all new carpet. And it's a big unit. It's a 1200 square foot unit. It's not like a 500 or 600 square foot unit. So we had to carpet everywhere. We had to paint everywhere. And then the appliances, again, were the appliances that came with it. And I just kept cleaning them and using them. Well, again, they were so bad that he said, "You're getting new appliances." He goes, "We're not even going to try to scrape these out. I said, I get it. So all of that went into the dumpster. We got new floors in the kitchen. We got new carpet everywhere else in the house. We got new paint everywhere, old house, high ceilings. So, you know, lots of work was done in there, and it was my most expensive flip. And so, I was like, it's what it is, you know, but again, you've got to look at the big picture. When I look at what I paid for that building, how many months, years that I've had it rented, and then I subtract out what I spent even on this last flip, I'm still way, way, way ahead of the game. So you have to be prepared for some of those, because every so often, you know, like I like to say, you know, you either get to eat the bear or the bear gets to eat you. And every so often the bear gets to eat you. So you have to be prepared for some of those more expensive flips, because they are going to happen at some point where you've got a little more work to do than maybe what you're hoping for. We're all hoping that, you know, it's going to be a quick flip and we're not going to spend a lot, but every so often you're going to have to take a hit. So one of my tips and tricks that I love is that you can do it two ways. Number one, I have a credit card that the bank that has the credit card sends me convenience checks every so often because they want me to use their credit card. Well, I am very disciplined when it comes to using credit. And so I will use that convenience check when it's a very expensive flip for whatever reason. Let's say I have to put a new roof on a house. And, you know, it's maybe a $12,000 invoice or a $10,000 invoice. I can use a convenience check for that and pay the roofing company off. And then I set it up to where every time, because usually on a convenience check, you get 0% interest. So it's like free money. You got a free loan. It's 0% interest on that convenience check for maybe 15 months or maybe 18 months. And so let's say it's 18 months. I'll then take the total, my $10,000, $12,000, whatever I spent, divide it by 18. And then I just put that every time that tenant pays their rent, I pay toward the convenience check. I pay toward that credit card to pay that off. Now, the way the convenience checks work, and same as if you do a balance transfer, if any of you have done that, if you are late or miss one payment, they dump all the interest back in. So you don't dare be late or miss a payment, or you lose that whole idea of having 0% interest. And so what I like to do, let's say it's an 18 month, I like to just divide it by 17. That way I know I'm making that last payment before that 18 months gets away from me. And I set it up automatically in my bill pay so that I'm never late. And I set the date to pay it late enough in the month that I give the tenant plenty of time for their rent to clear and to dump into that account. Now, for me, each one of my units has its own separate bank account. A lot of folks will dump all of their rent money into one big rental account, and that's okay too. And then you can keep track of that in other ways. But because I don't want to do double, triple ledger entry, I open a bank account for each one of my buildings. Now, I might have a four unit and it has one bank account for all four of those units. I might have a single family unit and it'll have an account. So each address, if you will, or each property, each building will have its own bank account. And so then if I put a roof on that building, whether it's a single family, duplex, triplex, fourplex, whatever it is, if I put a new roof on that building, then when all of that rent comes in, however many units are in that building, that's when I pay toward that convenience check. Now, you might say, I don't have convenience checks. I don't get those. So how can I use that hack? So here's another way that I've learned to do it. And I did it for my daughter's wedding back in the day. It was the first time I did it. And when I realized how well it worked, I've done it many times since on for properties. But back in the day, Jennifer and Matt, they wanted to get married and they decided they were going to get married in 2 years. And I thought, oh, good, that'll give me time to save up some money. And my plan was to put it all to open up a whole separate bank account, save money up for 2 years. And then when it was time for them to get married, I was just going to give them the debit card or the credit card to that account and say, this is your wedding present. Use it however you want. You can use it on the dresses. You can use it on the wedding. You can use it on a down payment on a house. You can use it on your honeymoon, however you want to use it. And that was going to be my wedding present to them. Well, then fast forward, my mom found out that she had a brain tumor. And the doctor did not know what her life expectancy was going to be. And my mom was very instrumental in helping me with Jennifer over the years. And so Jennifer says, Mom, she said, Matt and I decided we want to get married now because we want grandma to definitely be at the wedding and we want to go ahead and get married. And I was like, okay, I have no money. How am I going to do this? So what I did is I went online and there was a credit card company that was doing a special on a transfer balance, not a convenience check. They just said, if you sign up and transfer your balance over, we're going to give you 18 months with no interest if you transfer your balance over here. So I thought, because I had no convenience checks on any of my accounts, they all had, you know, 22, 24% interest. You know how credit cards are. So I thought, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put her entire wedding on one of my existing credit cards at 22% interest, whatever the interest rate was. And then as soon as we get everything purchased, I'm going to go online and I'm going to transfer that whole balance over to a new credit card that is giving this 18 month at 0% special for transfer balances. And so I would only have to pay interest on one payment because I had to get all of that to hit the current credit card. And I made my first payment. Then I went online, transferred the whole thing over. And now I had 18 months. So it's almost the same as me saving up for the wedding. I now had basically a loan from a credit card company at 0% interest. They were giving me this money for 18 months at no interest at all. That's like a free money loan. So that's how I paid for her wedding. And of course, you know, I don't know if she knew that or not, but it was wonderful. And my mom did pass away and Jennifer was able to have her grandma at her wedding. So that was the goal. And I did not have to pay any interest on what I spent for her wedding because that's how I handled it. Well, it worked so well that when I got into the real estate investing, I realized that I could do that back and forth between credit cards. So I have, let me count, I probably have 5 different credit cards and I have just gone in and asked for higher balances. I mean, I just went in and said, I want to increase my balance. And so most of my credit cards have $20,000 or $30,000 balance that I'm allowed to charge. And most of them have zero on them because I pay them off. But what I do, if I don't have a convenience check, I will go through right online. You can see what are the current specials. And a lot of those credit cards will have a transfer balance special, especially if you haven't used that card for a while, because they want you to use that card. See, that's how they make their money. And they're taking a chance that you're not going to pay it off in 18 months and they're going to make some interest on you. And so if you've not used a card for a while, chances are if you go online and look, it'll say that they have a special going right now where you can either get free interest for 18 or 15 months or a 1.9% interest, which is still really good. And but then after the 15 or 18 or 12 or whatever the special is, then it goes back to their normal interest. So you don't want to miss your payoff or you'll end up paying that interest. But you can go to a different card, charge the big repair that you need on your property, and then immediately transfer it to that transfer special. Now, there generally is a 3% transfer fee, and that's okay. You know, I mean, they are going to make some money on that. But even then, you know, it's not huge. So even if you did $10,000, you're talking $300 to transfer it over. Well, if I've got a $10,000 roof repair and it's going to cost me $300 to borrow $10,000, that's still a pretty good deal. And so that's just my little favorite hack. So any comments or questions on that?
We do that same thing. When we were doing the remodel on the little apartment behind us, one of our credit cards had a, I don't remember, it was like 12 months, you know, to pay off anything charged between these dates. So mm-hmm. we just used it for all of our big purchases and had a whole year to pay it off.
Yep. It's free money is free money. You know, if you, anytime you can use someone else's money, that's the way to go. You always want to use someone else's money if you get the opportunity, and keep your money in the savings account. Even if you have the cash, it's a great way to go. And especially if you've got the property already rented or you've got it already spoken for, and you already know that you've got money coming in for that property, or you're going to have, then just let your tenant buy their own roof. Let your tenant buy their own new furnace. Let your tenant buy their own new windows. Because at the end of the day, you get the property. At the end of the day, you're growing your legacy with the property itself. You know, you're getting equity, which is, you know, that's why I like real estate so well, because you're earning money all these different ways. So anytime you can fix a property up, look at the big picture on what the value it's going to bring into the property at the other end. And if you can use somebody else's money to fix it up, that's definitely the way to go. So I love credit cards. A lot of people are like, oh, I never use credit cards. I don't want to get stuck in that trap. You've got to be consistent and you have to be disciplined to not get yourself in trouble. Yes, Shanti.
So with the convenience check is a different hack than what you would do with the credit card, right? It's a convenience check when the credit card company sends you out something to say, hey, use this.
Yeah, the credit card company is doing it as, and you're in my Build a Better Business, so you'll get this. It's the credit card company's way to entice you to use them. They say, this person hasn't been using our credit card and we want them to. So they send out a little packet of checks that are on the credit, you know, payable onto the credit card. And they say, hey, use these checks if you want to take a trip or remodel your kitchen, or, you know, they're trying to get you to use their credit card and you haven't been. So that's their ploy, because they're thinking, well, they're not swiping the card. Maybe they'll cash one of these checks for a big ticket, because they're wanting to get you to use their credit card. So I watch for those and I put them in the folder, I save them. And then when I have a big ticket, the first thing I do, my first choice is to actually go and see if there's a convenience check, because you don't have that transfer fee if you use the convenience check. So my first choice is to use a convenience check if I have one. But when things got a little tight there for a while, you know, when the market kind of crashed, banks stopped sending out those convenience checks because people were getting upside down on their credit cards rather severely, and the banks were stuck and not getting paid. And that kind of dried up for a while. So that's when I had to get creative. And I thought, well, how else can I use 0% money? And so that's when the credit card companies were like, you know, we don't want you to have new debt, but if you'll transfer your debt from another credit card over to us, we'll give you 0% for 12 months or 15 months trying to get my business. But I used it again to my advantage, because that way I could pay off some really big repairs with somebody else's money, basically. Okay. So it was one of my little hacks where charge it on whatever card you want, as long as you don't charge it on the one that has the transfer deal going, because that's where you want to transfer it to get the free interest.
Okay. And do convenience checks expire?
They do. Yes, they do. But right now, I used to get them all the time from Chase. I have two Chase credit cards. I used to get them all the time from Chase. I haven't gotten one from Chase for a long time. But I do have a Bank of America card. And because we fly Allegiant all the time, and Allegiant had a special going that you got some airfare discounts or whatever. And we've got a condo in Florida, so we fly Allegiant. So we got the Bank of America card so that we could, you know, get our discounts for our flights. And so Bank of America are constantly sending me the convenience checks. Mm. And so they're good for oh, don't quote me, maybe 8 to 12 weeks, maybe not quite that long. Anyhow, it'll be very clear when you get it in the mail. It'll say, use this for, you know, a trip or to remodel your kitchen or what. And I'm thinking, I'm using it to put a new furnace in a rental. And, yeah. But then I get another pack about the time that that pack expires, I get another pack. And so then I'll shred those and then save the new one. So I always have the newest version in my folder. And so then when my HVAC guy, for example, calls me up and says, Kathy, you're going to need a new furnace, and that's going to be $4,000. I'm like, let me see if I've got a convenience check for you.
Okay.
So I use somebody else's money every time I can.
Okay. Thank you.
I put roofs on several of my properties over the past year with my convenience checks. So most of my properties all have new roofs now. So next year, 2023, is going to be the year of windows. And so I've got some I'm going to take the oldest house first, and I'm going to start putting new in. Tammy, what do you spend to put new windows in a house?
We did that duplex that had needed 18 windows. I think we spent, I don't remember. It was cheaper than I expected.
Do you remember what it was per window? Because then you had to go back and have them trimmed out.
Yeah, it was like maybe $200 a window.
I was thinking $250. So yeah. even at $250 a window times 18 windows, you're talking $4,500. So you're not talking $20,000 to put windows in a house. You're talking $5,000, you know. And so I have several houses, though, that need windows. And I need to have them trimmed out on the inside and outside once the windows are installed. So again, I'm just going to get some estimates. I'm going to start with the worst of the worst and notify my tenants that they're getting new windows, which is going to make them happy because their utility bills are going to go down.
We are putting in windows in the duplex behind us, and David's actually doing it. The tenant upstairs, he's like, just go in while I'm at work, do whatever you need. He was so excited. The tenant downstairs is dragging his feet because he's been there 16 years, so he's collected a lot of stuff, and he has blocked most of the windows, so they're really hard to get to. So he will uncover one window at a time for David to get to. So in the past 2 weeks, he's done two windows, and the tenant will only let him in to do one window at a time. And he is not happy about it. He's not thankful. He said, I've never even opened those windows. I don't care.
which is why he's not being very helpful. I get it. I get it. Now, it's hard for David and Tammy because they are in a fourplex and the renter lives on the back of their property. So they're kind of all on the same plot. And that does make it a little more difficult. I do not live where any of my tenants are. And so I have, over the past couple of years, adopted a more hands-off approach. And so they just get an email from me through Inago, where I manage, it's just an online property software program. It's free to the landlord. And I just send them a notice through Inago that says, you're getting new windows or you're getting a new roof or whatever they're getting. And this is the company, and this company will be contacting you on the date that they will be there. And I don't even contact the tenant. I let the contractor contact my tenant and work out when they're coming in to do whatever needs to be done. And I stay totally out of it. Because if you live in an apartment complex, how many has lived in an apartment complex in the past? Yeah, we all have. Did they let you vote when they were going to come in and do something? You just got a note that on Tuesday, we're coming in to do this. And you just had to deal with it. And so that's kind of the attitude that I've taken, and that works for me. But I get that it's a little harder when you're living on the same plot of ground where your tenants are, because they think, well, you know, why are you bugging me? I know you.
We got a quote to have the windows done, and it was more than we had saved up in our budget. So instead, David decided he would do it himself, and we're doing 8 windows for $1,600.
And if you have the skill set to do that, you absolutely can do that if you have the skill set. And again, we had that property up in Sandusky. For those of you that were on board as we were doing that, we bought one that had a lead report on it, and it had old wood windows with lead paint. And so Mark physically changed out 13 windows himself on a second story, three bedroom unit. And he actually bought those windows. They were all vinyl. And he bought them from a fourplex that had a fire in Lancaster, and they were tearing the building down. And they said, "We're selling the windows out if you want them." And I forget, I think he paid $20 a window, but he had to go take them out. So he took them out and brought them home. And then I had to wash them because there had been a fire. So there was some soot. The windows weren't damaged. They just had soot on them. And so I washed and washed and washed and washed and washed those windows, because again, it was an older house that had replacement windows. We didn't know if any of that soot had lead paint in it. So, and we were trying to make this property lead free up in Sandusky. So I washed and washed and washed and washed all of those vinyl windows. And then Mark took them up and installed them in that unit. And we passed our lead inspection, and the house is now doesn't have any lead paint in it. But again, we did it for $20 a window, because Mark bought used windows and they were the right size. And so we did that entire three bedroom unit for $260. But again, Mark had the skill set to pull the old wood windows out and put those new vinyl ones in. So yeah, you can save a lot of money if you can do it yourself, but not everybody can do that. So even if you're paying a company to do it, you're still not looking at a huge sum of money, even at $250, $300 a window. I've got a big duplex. I have about 20 windows. And even at $350 a window, I'm talking $7,000 to do the entire 20 windows. So again, it's a ticket, but it's doable. And it definitely increases the value of your property more than the $7,000 that you're spending on getting new windows. It definitely increases the value of the property. Because when you put something back out on the market, if you should decide that you need to, or you need to get an appraisal because you want to pull some money out of that unit for a line of credit so that you can maybe use that money to buy something else, all of that goes into the calculation on what the market value of that property is. Okay, any other questions, comments?
I've got a question for you, Kathy. So as far as the laws and how you learn how to manage your property, is there a specific website or book that you went by to learn the landlord laws when it comes to working with your tenants and stuff?
Look at Elise.
Managing rental properties. Right. Is that the one through Bigger Pockets?
It is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bigger Pockets is a great resource. And then I have a course that's online in the Academy, and it has some resources in there. And then in the Mastermind, which Shandy, I'm not sure why you didn't get the code out of them. It could be that you didn't tap into the Mastermind correctly or something, or deep enough to find the Zoom code for today. But I'll add you to where you should get it. A reminder, a weekly reminder of all of our meetups. And you should be able to link right through my calendar over to the Mastermind to get the Zoom codes.
So when I did go through the actual link that you sent out through in the email, it took to the course instead of the actual Zoom. So I actually went into the course, but the course says Tuesday at 6 p.m.
Okay, now that's the free meetup. If you scroll down, there's going to be the Mastermind, and then there's going to be the meet and greet. There's three different meetups that we do through Happy House Hunters. There's the free one on the first Tuesday, then there's the Mastermind one, which we're doing today, and then there is the meet and greet on the fourth Thursday, which is in person. But today, what I sent you, write that down, because it will always be the same for this particular meetup.
Okay.
The one that I sent you today.
Okay, thank you.
And so that's another little hack on all of mine. I've got a little card here, and I've got all my Zoom codes. I just Rotomol, and they go right under the glass top on my desk. So that way I don't have to look them up. I can just go right to the Zoom and sign in.
Okay.
So that's another little hack. So you don't have to look them up each month. The reason that I bury the mastermind one a little bit into the course or into the mastermind group is because we had some hackers over the years. Mm-hmm. And so the free one is registration for a webinar, and the mastermind one, you can come directly into the meeting like you did today. So just make a note of it. It'll be the same one every month. I don't change it up. It'll be the same Zoom code. But if you go to our mastermind, then there's a resource section there as well. So if you need some resources every time we use contractors and we have a good experience, not only do we list them in our resource section, but we list who they came from, so that if you wanted to contact that other mastermind person and say, hey, how did it work out with this plumber, or how did it work out with this roofer, you can actually talk to someone that used them. And that's helpful.
Okay.
That's very helpful. And we find that we have different companies that kind of rise to the top. So Tammy, I don't know about you, but I have always had a good experience with like Pipeworks, for example. They're one of my top plumbing choices because they've always delivered. And even if they've struggled, you know, and had to, you know, work around scheduling or whatever, they've always delivered. And so I always keep them at the top of my plumbing list. So that's what we're after in our resources is folks like that. So we know we can count on them. Now I do all of my maintenance requests through Inago. I do all of my rent collection through Inago. I do all of my signing of my leases through Inago. I do all of my late fees through Inago. I do all of it through Inago because Inago is free to the landlord and it just simplifies your life. At least it has for me. And so I have all of my tenants simply send me a maintenance request. There's an app for their phone, and I make sure the day that we get them signed up and do our final walkthrough and I give them their key, that they have that Inago on their phone, and they show it to me that they do have it. And we go through and I show them how they send me a maintenance request. And so once that maintenance request pops up through Inago, I get notified that there's a maintenance request there, and they can mark whether it's urgent or not. And at that point, I can then simply pick up that maintenance request and email it right on to the vendor. And so once, like, Pipeworks, or again, I use my son-in-law Matt quite a bit, and so I can just forward it, and his is CW Property Solutions. Anyway, I can just forward it right on to their email that there is a maintenance request, and so oftentimes I don't even talk to the tenant or the contractor. It's just I get an email from the tenant. I can then go in and add my own notes to that maintenance request if I wanted to give some the contractor some specific instructions about it. And then I can just forward it right on to the contractor that's going to do the repair. And then the contractor contacts the tenant directly to gain access. I don't have to go meet him there. I don't have to work with the tenant on what time he's coming or not coming, or he didn't show up or whatever. And that's why you want to have some contractors that you can count on. You know, that's why you want that. That you can, you know, that if they're not going to show up, that they're going to call the tenant and say, hey, scheduling has happened. We have to come later this week or whatever. And so that way they, you know, that they're taking care of your clients on a good fashion, because that's at the end of the day, that's all your tenant needs to know. Your tenant just wants to know, are you going to take care of this for me? And I just want to say very few things are really an emergency. I mean, unless there's water running through the ceiling or the place is on fire, there's really no super, super emergency. If the kitchen faucet is leaking, it's not going to, even if they don't do anything to catch it, if it's not solid running and it's just a drip or the drain is leaking or whatever, it's not going to damage your whole house in a day or two. And so there's really few things that are actually an emergency.
And that's honestly the hardest part to get past, let me tell you from personal experience, because buddy, my anxiety shoots through the roof every time my tenants text me, or it used to, but getting used to it's like, okay, it's really not that big of an emergency. My most recent faux pas would be with the air unit. I got a text once the other tenant got back home after he had been in California for about 2 weeks. And the air had been off for a week, had no idea why, no one had let me know. And the one tenant thought it was because of the weather. It had been cool and I had my doors and windows open the entire time. So come to find out, you know, I didn't do my due diligence, so it's on me, but it was just the breaker had flipped. So I paid for them to come out and do a diagnostic and turn my breaker back on. But listen, it's all part of the learning game. I will take that over getting scammed. I'm all good here.
I get it. So I had, you know, all the salon businesses, you know, I ran the salons. I had five salons going and it was crazy busy and I'm working 12-hour days and I've got client every hour on the hour. And I finally got out of there and I was like, oh, I was brain dead. I was physically tired. I was mentally tired. I was just done. And the girls called me up and two different girls called me up and said, the microwave's not working. And I thought, you know what? They can't get out to get anything to eat. And they, you know, sometimes they bring like little frozen things to stick in the freezer. And I thought, doggone it. So I called my daughter and I said, what are you doing? And she's like, why, what you need? And I said, the microwave went on the blitz. And I said, they need a microwave. And she says, Mom, I've got an extra one. I'll run it over. I said, okay. She goes, what do we do with the old one? I said, throw it away. So she carries the old one in, and it was old. She carries it out, drops it in a trash can. Of course, the glass breaks, everything, because she dropped it into this trash can, puts her new little black one in there, which wasn't anywhere near the microwave. The original one was. It was a little cheap one, but hey, it worked. And it didn't work. And she was like, this worked at home. Why does it not work here? Well, you know, in a kitchen, you've got the little GF. Yeah, that had flipped. We trashed a perfectly good microwave because the little circuit had flipped in the wall. So I feel you, Elise. Mark still teases me about that.
It is what it is, right?
It is what it is. Like
lesson learned, but next time I'm going to be pressing all the buttons. You're not going to get me again.
Exactly. So now when anything goes off in the kitchen, you know, Mark is like, don't throw anything away.
Everyone relax.
So I get it. So yeah. And it is a learning curve. And I get why I was just like, I just can't go back in. I'm just totally exhausted and just take them another microwave. And she said, what do you mean to do the old, throw it away. There's no reason to save an old microwave. Well, had I told her, we'll set it aside. I'll take a look at it. Because there was nothing wrong with it. But of course, when she dropped it in the trash can, everything broke. So I said, it's done. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. But you just hate to spend money that you wouldn't have had to spend. I get it. I get for that. Sure. Yeah, I get that. And it is a learning curve. So anyone else? So Tammy, you want to share it all on your recent rehab, any aha moments in your rehab?
No, we're getting close to being done though. I think I just heard David come in the back door. He's been down there doing some punch list items and our contractor is supposed to finish up with that rehab. And it's our first single family and we decided we're gonna do property management on it just to try out property management. The property manager is supposed to come this week and take pictures and get it listed so that hopefully we can get that rented by October 1st. She thinks she'll have no trouble renting it out in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, I don't think you will either. It's a cute place. It really is. So, yep, I think it'll go fast.
Kind of like you said, we did some major things like adding central air, but we did a lot of just patchwork repairs just so we can get somebody in there quickly. David's already got a list of things he wants to do to it next time it turns over. So,
and again, that's looking at the big picture. So you're getting some cash flow coming in and it's a lot easier to pay for those repairs when you've got rent coming in.
That's what we figured. Get somebody in there to pay some rent and then we'll worry about making it perfect.
Yep. That's definitely the way to do it. I agree with that. Elise, anything other than your circuit breaker story, any other major?
Other than that, no, I totally agree with Tammy. Just, you know, trying to make sure that you get a tenant in there, and it doesn't have to be perfect. It has to be livable and that I would live in it. I can fix things yes. up, but if I wouldn't live in there at all, that's just not how I would like to present it. So
no, I agree. That's why I like to either steam the carpet or replace it if it needs it, and fresh paint, and then everything clean. You know, the bathroom's clean, the oven's clean, the refrigerator's clean. I don't want the tenant to have to go in and clean anything. I want them to feel like they're moving into a totally clean house.
Yeah.
So for me, the painting, the floor coverings, the cleaning, those are the three biggies. And if I've got an air unit that needs some attention, or I've got a roof that needs some attention, I'll still go ahead and do an open house and get applicants coming and get it scheduled to get it rented while I'm getting that other stuff done. Yep. Shanti, any comments, any ha-ha moments for you today?
No, I'm just really getting started. I'm at the very, very beginning, and listening to the prices that you all have there in Ohio versus here in Dallas, Texas, I'm like,
I know. I know. We just had a couple stay at our guest house, the bed and breakfast, from Texas. And she said everything is $1.5 million mansions. Yeah. She said there are all these huge, huge houses. And she said they're all so expensive.
Yeah.
And she said that's what they're building everywhere. She said that's what the demand is there.
Yeah. I'm even trying to get started with a duplex. And even the duplex that I've checked out, they start at like $380.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, I can make it work. But yeah, so just gathering even knowledge from you all gives me a step ahead, because there's some things, like, I don't know any other investors, you know? So listening to this information right here gives me that, you know, to have in my brain, like, okay, let me go ahead and jot that down and get that in for myself.
Yeah. Now, just remember, whatever the market rent is in where your duplex that you're looking at is located, just remember that if it's close to any hospitals where you could do it as a midterm, you're going to make about twice the money. And if you could turn it into a short term, you're going to make about four times the money. But the difference is that you have to go over there and flip it more often.
Okay.
So it's a little more work, but you get more money.
That's great. Because where I'm looking at is close to one of the universities. Mm-hmm. And also there are three major hospitals around here.
You might want to think about renting it as a midterm, and then see, now when you're basing what you want to spend, mm-hmm. your income is going to be a little different that you're going to get out of it.
You have to make sure you know what the rules are, though, for your short and midterm rentals. We have daughters that live in Austin, and we were going to get a short-term rental there, but the city has very strict requirements in Austin on short-term rentals. And we couldn't, as out-of-state investors, we weren't allowed to rent a short-term rental.
Interesting.
Within the city. You can rent if it's on your property or if you live in the city of Austin, but we couldn't rent one from out-of-state. So just be sure you know what your rental,
what the zoning is.
Yeah.
And where do I have to go to, like, the city council, and like, or how do I find that information to get the zoning information?
Is it inside city limits, the one you're looking at?
Yes.
Okay. You would go to that municipality and you would ask if they have any rules for midterm or short-term rentals.
I Googled it, and then I actually asked my realtor when we were looking. Although my realtor that I had wasn't very helpful, I ended up finding another realtor that was more helpful.
Now, some areas, it'll all be on their website. If you go to the city's website, there'll be a section for that. If it's not there, then you might have to just make a phone call into the municipality and just say, here's what I'm thinking about doing. Where can I get some information on what the zoning rules are for that?
Okay. If it's in Dallas, just Google Dallas short-term rental regulations and dallascityhall.com comes up with a PDF about the short-term rental regulations.
Thank you. This is awesome. Thank you.
But if you can do midterm, that's kind of the sweet spot because you're not working quite as hard. You're still getting twice the rent. And your tenants are professionals that really take care of your property. It's not like you get somebody that brings in all the kids and all the dogs. And oftentimes on a midterm, it's somebody that's in the medical profession and they're only there to sleep because they're working 12-hour days at the hospital. And they go home on the weekends to see their family.
Yeah, that's true. Because I actually came from the hospital. And there are plenty of travel
nurses.
Yeah, that are always looking for places to reside for the time being.
Now, the house that you're in, do you have an extra bedroom?
Yes, but I'm in a rental though, right now.
But if you have an extra bedroom, you could talk with your landlord, and since you live there, you could actually rent out your extra bedroom to a traveling nurse, and you could dump a few $100 a month into your savings to help you get started on some properties.
Okay, I actually do have that because the other room is a 3-bedroom, but the other room is just literally an office.
Mm-hmm.
No, okay.
Just a thought.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, we ran over a little bit, but it's been great conversation. So thank you everyone for being on today. Thanks. All right. This Thursday here in Ohio is our meet and greet. If anybody can come out, I believe, yes, it's the 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure I'm on the, am I on the right?
Yes, it is at Gresso's.
Yep. At Gresso's on the 22nd. So if you're able to come out and join us, please do that. We had a great conversation last month, so we're hoping for one this month. All right, everyone. See you later.
See ya. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.